Hi, you're listening to a podcast brought to you by the teaching team at New Life in North Lincolnshire. New Life is committed to helping transform people and transform places through the love and power of Jesus Christ. We hope you, in some small way, will be blessed and transformed by this message.
Good morning, everybody. It is wonderful to be with you. Thank you for the opportunity to share in this wonderful series that we have been doing called Risen. If you've missed any of the series, you can get it on podcast or you can jump on the YouTube channel and watch that and catch up with that. And it's my joy to be part of this series and to be sharing. If you were here last week, Pastor Russ talked about Peter's experience and how Peter experienced the resurrected Jesus personally. And we've been thinking a little bit, not just about the power of the resurrection, big picture, the big macro impact of the resurrection, which is there across the universe, but also the sort of gorgeous individual stories. Those beautiful moments when men and women at an individual and sort of intimate and personal level experience the resurrected Jesus. And we're sort of carrying on that theme this morning in what we are doing. So if you've got a Bible with you, I'm going to read from a beautiful story. One of my favorites, actually, from the Gospel of Luke. So I'm going to read from Luke chapter 24. If you've got a Bible, I would love you to look that up and follow with me. If you haven't got a Bible, you're a guest, then you can just follow it with me and listen as I read it to you. But let me just set the scene for you. The women have come back from the grave. In fact, in this particular case in Luke, we've got Mary Magdalene. We've got Mary, the mother of James. We've got Joanna. And they have come back and said, "We met two angels at the tomb. Jesus is alive." Peter, to go and check that out, runs to the tomb and he can't find the body. And so it's all kicking off as far as the young disciples are concerned. And then we pick up our story right at that point in Luke's gospel. Now, one of the beautiful things for us to recognize, and this is a great idea for our general reading of the Bible, is that this story we're about to read is unique to the Gospel of Luke. So whenever you're reading the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, every now and again you'll come across stories that are only in one of the Gospels. And what the Gospel writer wants to do there is really draw your attention to something. They really want you to see something that's really important to their agenda, something they want to say about Jesus that they believe is really crucial. And this is what we've got here. So here we go, verse 13 of Luke chapter 24. And it says these words. "Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened." That's all the stuff we've just talked about. "As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. But they were kept from recognizing him." Awkward moment. "He asked them, 'What are you discussing together as you walk along?' They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Clopas, asked him, 'Are you only a visitor in Jerusalem and do not know the things that have happened there in these days?' 'What things?' he asked. 'About Jesus of Nazareth,' they replied. 'He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. And in addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they'd seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said. But him, they did not see. He said to them, 'How foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself." What a sermon that must have been. "As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus acted as if he were going further." Another little awkward moment in the text there. "But they urged him strongly, 'Stay with us, for it is nearly evening, and the day is almost over. So we went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, it is true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon. Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread with them. Wow. Hundreds of years before this story happened, Solomon wrote these amazing words, and we'll all identify with these words in some way or another. He said this, hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a longing fulfilled is a tree of life. Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a longing fulfilled is a tree of life. Now, you may be in church for the very first time and didn't even realize that was in the Bible, or you could be a Christian for many, many years, but all of us know intuitively that's true, don't we? Every single person, I would venture to suggest, and I could be wrong, so if I am wrong, you can grab me at the door and correct me. But I would suggest that every single person in this room has had a moment, maybe just one at least, where hope has been deferred. Okay, there's three of us have experienced that quite clearly. All right, we've had moments where we hoped for something, and for whatever reason, it has not happened. And I don't know about you, but my experience of that has been when I've really hoped for something, been certain of something, something was going to happen, and it hasn't quite happened, it sort of does something to you, okay? Makes the heart sick, because you'd hoped that something would occur, or something would happen, or someone would buy you that present you've been hinting at all year, and it just hasn't happened. Who's with me? Who's with me? Does that make sense to you? Intuitively, whoever you are in this room, you know that hope, something you've hoped in when it doesn't happen, sort of hurts you a little bit, however you describe that and whatever that looks like. But on the flip side, of course, positively, I would probably imagine everybody in the room has had an experience where a longing fulfilled has been a tree of life. You've actually got something, and it's worked out and happened the way you hoped it would, and boom, it filled you with energy, it filled you with life, it filled you with joy, and you can't stop talking about it, right? It's Mark, isn't it? Nottingham Forest. Come on. Come on, a longing fulfilled is a tree of life. Even for Nottingham Forest supporters. Come on now. Have we actually got people in the room that support Nottingham Forest? No. Sorry? You're Man U? Okay, you can get out now. Get out. Okay, this church is open to everybody except Man United supporters. So if you're in that category, get out right now. In Jesus' name. You're not welcome. Okay, so the hope... Sorry, did I say that out loud? Sorry. Hope deferred makes the heart sick. Now, talking about football, let me just land it in there. Anyone who knows me knows I am a mad red. Now, I'm an original red. So Liverpool is the original red. Any reds in the room? Okay, we need to do something about this in the church. Not many reds in the room. Now, if you say to certain Liverpool supporters of a certain age, where were you on the 25th of May, 2005? They will tell you. Because on the 25th of May, 2005, a miracle happened. Okay, Liverpool were playing in the Champions League final against AC Milan. We weren't very good, actually, as a team. We were a very poor Liverpool team. Miraculously, we got to the final, which was incredible. But by halftime, Liverpool were losing 3-0. And that was kind to us. It could have been 5 or 6-0. I've never seen a worse display as a Liverpool supporter ever. In fact, it was so bad, I sent a text at halftime to my friend Alan Graham, who will be here in a couple of weeks' time. And I sent a text to Alan. He's one of my best friends. He's also a mad red. And I just had a text read, I'm going to the kitchen to get some chocolate, then I'm going to bed. Okay, I was so upset because I built myself up that we were going to win this, and then Liverpool were playing terrible, and it looked like we were going to lose 6 or 7 nil. It really was that bad as a match. But being a long-suffering Liverpool supporter, I decided not to go to bed immediately, and I decided to stay up for 5 more minutes just to see if anything would change. And I'm so glad I did. Because I noticed Liverpool had made a few changes and we were playing a bit better. Within a few moments in the second half, Steven Gerrard knocked the ball into the net with his head. 3-1. Then a few minutes after that, Smeetzer, and it's the only thing he ever did while he played for Liverpool, Smeetzer hit a rocket from 25 yards into the bottom corner. In fact, I was cheering before it hit the net. It was amazing. And then a few minutes after that, Gerrard makes a run into the box. He gets fouled. We get a penalty. We score the penalty. And it's 3-3. It's amazing. It went to full time at 3-3. It went to extra time at 3-3. We went to penalties. And Liverpool won. Now, this is where Mark is a Christian and where I'm not. Okay? So Dawn had warned me, no shouting, no joke. We've got neighbors and we've got children. We had a wooden floor at the time. And when Liverpool won with the final penalty, I literally stage dived across the floor. It's true. Literally belly flopped across the floor, screaming at the top of my voice. We were the champions of Europe. It was literally, it's a cliche, a game of two halves. The first half was hope deferred. I was ready to quit supporting Liverpool for the rest of my life after that half. It was all over. I was going to be humiliated. My so-called Man United supporting friends were about to bombard me on social media and tell me how horrible a team we were. By the end of the game, it was like a tree of life that had fulfilled me, and I was back on track with the Reds. You will never walk alone. Come on. Our story in Luke 24 is a game of two halves. It really is. The first half of this story, if we had stopped halfway through, would have all been depressed. If we'd have stopped this without going all the way to the end, then we would have a very, very different story in play. The first half of our story is hope deferred. But the second half of our story is a longing fulfilled, which becomes literally in the hearts of these two people. And I suspect these two people were man and wife. That's my personal theory. Everybody assumes they were both men. But look, they went to the same village. They lived at the same house. I think they were man and wife. That's my theory. When I get to heaven, I want to check that one out. But I'm fairly certain they were husband and wife. And they go from deferred hope to a fulfilled tree of life in their world. And what's at the heart of it is their experience with Jesus. And I want you to see something which is very, very powerful here. I think one of the fruits of deferred hope is confusion. So I think when a person gets sick in heart, when hope is deferred, I think one of the things that can be part of the sickness of the heart is confusion. When you really, 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 really hoped that something would happen, and then it doesn't happen, it can bring confusion to your world. Is that fair as an observation? Maybe that's just me, but that's certainly been my experience. At halftime, I'm confused about Liverpool tactics. I'm confused about what's going on. I'm confused about what I'm experiencing because I had hope. I had hope that we would win the game. There is confusion here, but the confusion isn't just general confusion. It's confusion about Jesus. That's the problem with this story. It's really awkward because it's not just general confusion. The hope that they felt was based on Jesus. And now the confusion they're experiencing is because something they hoped about in Jesus doesn't seem to have happened. Are you with me? Their own language says this. It says that they said, "We had hoped he was the one." We had hoped he was the one. We had hoped he was the one who was going to come and redeem Israel. They had absolutely put everything on the table for this Messiah, for this Jesus. They believed he was the one. But a few days before, they've just seen him brutally crucified and humiliated in public. And everything they hoped he would be seems to have been ripped away. And now it's the confusion over Jesus that has created the crisis in their life. Do you know, I hope you understand this. I'm sure many of you will. But if you're a follower of Jesus, we have a spiritual enemy. We have someone who not only hates Jesus, but hates anybody who follows Jesus, right? He hates anything that represents Jesus. And one of the things he wants to do in our lives is create confusion around Jesus. If he can get me and you confused about Jesus, he will create, can I say this carefully, a sickness in our own soul. We will come to a place of dis-ease and disorientation, and we'll find ourselves in a very, very dangerous place. If you've been a follower of Jesus any length of time, you've probably all had a moment like this, where you've become confused, and at the heart of that confusion is generally this sort of experience that you had hoped for something and it hasn't quite worked the way you want it. And that's why this series and an understanding of the resurrection of Jesus is so important, because at the heart of our lives must be a vision, a clarity, an understanding, a revelation of who Jesus is. It's who Jesus is that will carry us in every situation. It's who Jesus is that will carry us when everything is not making sense. It's who Jesus is that will hold us when we hit halftime and think, what just happened? Right? It's the clarity around Jesus that's going to make the difference. And these two gorgeous people, these two people who had been following Jesus for some time, are deeply confused. Why? Because they had put all their hope that Jesus was the Messiah, and they had just seen that hope ripped to shreds on a cross. Even though there were some rumors that his body was missing and he was no longer there. And the enemy wants us confused. And in my years of Christian ministry, and I've had the privilege of serving Jesus full-time in ministry for about 36 years almost. If I had a pound for every time I'd come across this, where a Christian has become confused about him, and that's created the wobble in our world, then actually I'd be sort of independently wealthy. Because hope deferred makes the heart sick. And actually, he wants to call us back to a place of firmness and security that helps manage, can I say this? Manage what feels like deferred hope. So when we look at our story, it's a sort of a game of two halves, really. We see the result of confusion, and then we see the result of, like, I'll call it revelation or clarity. Within that. Let's just look at that and see what we can learn from this story. So confusion, what does the confusion produce in their world? Well, number one, their confusion caused them to question. Okay, I don't know if you noticed it in our text that we read together and a little bit before the text, but in our text it said in verse 22, in addition, some of the women amazed us because they went to the tomb this morning but didn't find a body. Now that's a little echo of a previous statement that was made earlier on in Luke 24 in verse 11. Listen to these words, less kind to the women. Here's what it says. When the women returned from the tomb, it says, but they did not, that's the disciples and everyone else gathered, they did not believe the women because their words seemed like nonsense to them. Very strong. Okay, I'm not going to make any comment other than they clearly look and listen to the words of the women and regard those words as nonsense. The word can point to idle, lazy tittle-tattle, gossipy type language. It's language without substance. It's gossipy type stuff. And they regard the testimony of Mary Magdalene, Joanna, and Mary the mother of James as tittle-tattle. They just dismiss them. Wow, amazing. And then The two on the road talk about the words of the women amazing them. The word there can literally point to the idea of being beside yourself. The words of the women freaked us out. Right? Now, actually, if they had been listening to Jesus for any length of time, they shouldn't have been surprised at what the women said, right? Because it's not like this is a surprise. Jesus had been like telling them, I'll die, but I'll rise from the dead. I'll die, but I'll rise. We get this message over and over again. So it shouldn't have surprised them. So the words themselves from the women aren't the issue. It's the attitude of the listeners is the issue. The women weren't talking nonsense. The women were telling the truth. The women weren't beside themselves. The women were telling the truth. The issue was not what the women said. The issue was the attitude of the listeners. That's what confusion does. Confusion about Jesus makes us slightly cynical of those around us who have conviction about Jesus. I've seen this so many times. And actually, it's sometimes when we become confused in our own journey that we question those who've got some sort of conviction. And we use language like, oh, he's over the top. Right? He's just too excitable. She's just, it's too much. Now, actually, it's not that they're too much. It's very quiet. It's not that they're excitable. It's that most of the time we're slightly cynical. Are you with me? Come on. Some of you clearly don't agree with me, but I really don't care because it's the truth. You know it's true. I know it's true. I have had moments where I have reacted to the convictions of others negatively, not because what they said was wrong, but because something in me wasn't right. Come on now. Come on. It's got to be more than me in the room that's had that experience. Come on. Are you with me? That's part of the challenge of once you get confused about Jesus, here's one of the wee challenges that happens. We become a wee bit cynical. And we question, we push back, not necessarily aggressively, but something in our heart pushes back. Somebody says, that's worship. We push back. Somebody says, come on, don't be silent. We push back.
I'm not going to say anything.
Well, that's more your problem than Dina's. Come on.
You're glad I don't preach her often, don't you, aren't you?
No, it's the truth. It's the truth. And I've met all of this all my life, and I've seen it in myself, where I've tried to blame you because of my cynicism. But it's me. And I've become confused about if I turn up today with Jesus focused in my mind. Actually, it doesn't matter how good or bad or indifferent the service was. It's not about how good or bad or indifferent the service. It's about Jesus. It's not about whether the band were brilliant or not. It's about Jesus. It's not whether the preacher was good or not. It's about Jesus, right? And I know that sounds really simple, but that's what's kept me alive as a Christian for all of these years. If I put my eyes on all the other stuff, I'd never be here. Come on now. Come on. Confusion caused them to question. Secondly, confusion caused them to abandon. Look at this. It says, now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. Now, if you're listening to Jesus in the build-up to this death and resurrection moment, Jesus is hinting strongly, stay here, stay here, stay here, stay here. This is what's going to happen. Stay here. Stay here. In other words, he wants them to be close to the epicenter of the events that are taking place. He doesn't want them to run. He knows they'll be tempted to. He knows they'll be tempted to leave. The only time he encourages them to leave Jerusalem is when he says, I'll meet you in Galilee. So there's a specific reason for them to leave Jerusalem, because they're going to meet him there. But actually, he wants them to stay here. Isn't it interesting that when our two gorgeous disciples get confused, what do? They abandon the community of faith. Wow. Seen that a few times. They abandon the community of faith. Their confusion often seeks to avoid community with others.
I've seen this over and over again. I've seen it in myself. And this is why a revelation of Jesus is so important, because it's Jesus that keeps bringing us back to community, right? I don't turn up and I'm not committed to community because the community's perfect, my goodness. Or because everybody in the community is my type. It's possible to be a Christian and not like everybody. Is that all right? No, clearly not. I'm clearly saying that in the wrong way. But it is. There's some people, even though they're Christians, if we weren't Christians, I probably wouldn't hang around them very much. Is that okay? Why? Because they're not my type. I'm not their type. We don't naturally like each other. So here's the thing. If my commitment to community was down to you, I wouldn't be here much. But our commitment to community is not down to whether the community is brilliant or not, or whether the community is perfect or not, or whether everybody in the community we like or not. Our commitment to community is because we are committed to Jesus Christ. And being committed to Jesus Christ means I have to be committed to community. I can't be a follower of Jesus and abandon community. All right? And I think that's a really important idea as we think about this. And here these two beautiful disciples, confused, what do? They leave Jerusalem. They abandon community. And I've seen this over and over again in my journey, that actually people abandoning community is either a sign something bad is about to happen or something has already happened. They become a bit disillusioned with something. And the enemy wants us so disillusioned that we go, forgive my language, stuff community. I can be a Christian on my own in my garden. Now, let me just say this. There's a sense in which that's true. If you were locked up in solitary confinement for the next 20 years, you'd still be a follower of Jesus. I get that. But actually, if we want to really embrace the Jesus of the resurrection, we have to pick up the challenge of embracing his body that we read about this morning. And that's the tricky bit. Jesus is cool. We aren't so much. Come on. Jesus is wonderful. We aren't always. Jesus is beautiful and perfect. Well, come on, is that, am I telling the truth or not? Is this right? Isn't this right, isn't it? And community's tough. Of course it's tough. And there would be many times that I would want to go, I don't want to go today. I want to be part of this day. I want to commit to this day. I want to give my money to this community. I don't want to serve this community. Of course, that's part of our human experience. But what keeps us coming back to community is Jesus. It's Jesus. We're not doing this just for the community. We're doing this for Jesus. And following Jesus is about committing to the community. Now, feel free to disagree with anything I say. Paid your money, you take your choice. But I think if you've been a follower of Jesus any length of time, you know this to be true. Here's the third moment of confusion, and then we'll get to halftime. Confusion, thirdly, caused them to return. Now, I want you to see this. Look at verse 13 again. It says they were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. Now, here's a gorgeous little thing. This is the only time in the whole of the Bible Emmaus is mentioned. And the only reason it's mentioned is because it's home. All right? And I think there's something really beautiful happening here. These two lovely followers of Jesus who are brokenhearted and confused are going back to the one place where life makes sense. They're going home. Don will tell you, I get to travel all over the country and have the privilege of traveling to different parts of the world and serving Jesus. And no matter how much I enjoy being where I am, I love turning for home. Like sometimes I'm going home and I know the way home and I'll still hit the home button on my sat-nav, because I just love the comfort of seeing the map for going home. Now, I know how to get home, but I just love that idea. I'm going home. Dawn will tell you, 99 times out of 100, driving home, I ring her. I know she's there. I know she'll be there when I get home. And yet there's something comforting about ringing the person you want to go home to. And Dawn's words, usually her first words when I ring and she picks up the phone is, "Are you on your way?" I am. I'm coming home. Because home makes sense. Home is a place of comfort. Home is a place where I'll be loved no matter what. And most times, home is the right place to go. In this moment, it was the wrong place to go. Why? Because they were moving to a place of comfort because they wanted to get away from a place of challenge. Nothing wrong with comfort. I like it. There's nothing wrong with the space you call home. I love it. But if where we're running to is a place to get away from the challenge that we're being called to, then home can be a dangerous place. Are you with me? They were heading home, away from Jerusalem, away from the challenge. And this is why I love this story. As they're going in the wrong direction, Jesus joins them. I know why you're going home, and I know why you're on this road, and I know what you're feeling, but I'm here to turn you around. I need to stop you moving in this direction. And I love this. And we reach this amazing moment, this amazing tipping point moment, halftime moment in the story. Verse 31, we're told this. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him. That's a direct sort of connection to verse 16 where it says that they were kept from recognizing him. So we get this awkward moment at the beginning where they're kept from recognizing him. And now their eyes are open and they recognize him. That they go from a place of confusion about Jesus to a revelation of Jesus. And it's that change from confusion about Jesus to a revelation of Jesus which changes the story dramatically. It's that that turns it from an Istanbul disaster to the miracle of Istanbul. It's that that flips it from, oh my goodness, it's all over, bar the shouting, to actually, it's not over, and there's more to come in our future and in our lives. I love this gorgeous moment. In Luke chapter 24, you'll notice there are three things that are open. Verse 31, their eyes were opened. Verse 32, they talk about the scriptures being opened. And then in verse 45, he opened their minds. Three things get opened. Identical phraseology. He's using the same sort of language. Someone or something from the outside is opening something. It's a supernatural moment. It's a moment of revelation and breakthrough. And here's what you'll notice in Luke 24. Every time something's opened, something is transformed. It's an amazing thing. Verse 31, their eyes were opened, and what happened? They recognized him. Wow, love that. Verse 32, the scriptures are open. What happens? Their hearts burned within them. Oh. Verse 45, their minds were opened when he taught them the Bible, and they understood. Whoa, love that. Love that. This is the antidote to our confusion. It's this sense of seeing something, revelation, not just general revelation, but a revelation of him. When we see him, everything changes. When we see him, everything is impacted. When we see him, everything gets challenged. Once you see him, you cannot unsee him. And then we're left with a choice. What do we do with what we've just seen? And we either embrace what we see and go in that journey with him, or we ignore what we've seen. What would they do? What would happen in the context of their journey? Well, just as we had three little levels of confusion, there are three beautiful examples of revelation here and its impact. Here we go. Revelation of him clarified their confusion. Brought clarity to their confusion. How so? Verse 32, they said, once their eyes were open, they saw Jesus, they said, did not our hearts burn within us. Now, work with me on this. This is an articulation of their own confusion, because when this stranger joins them on the road and starts talking to them, and he opens up the Torah, Moses, and he opens up the prophets, a confusing thing happens. In their brain, they know Jesus is dead. But what they're feeling in their hearts feels and sounds like Jesus. Something's going on in them that reminds them of the times Jesus taught them. Something's going on in them that reminds them of how they felt when Jesus opened the Torah. Something's going on with them when they experienced Jesus at his magnificent best, teaching and leading them. So their brains are saying, Jesus is dead, Jesus is dead, Jesus is dead. We had hoped he was the one. Their hearts are saying, this feels like Jesus. This feels like Jesus. This feels like Jesus. And what brought the two together was this revelation of Jesus. This revelation of Jesus brought clarity to what they had experienced and what they were experiencing. Brought it together. And I've discovered over and over again that in my journey as a follower of Jesus, sometimes confusion can be all around me. But an understanding of who Jesus is, a clarity of who Jesus is, a connection to Jesus, a focus on Jesus, helps bring calm and clarity in the midst of the storm that's going on around me. The clarity between what I am experiencing and what I know to be true. And sometimes as a Christian, you're experiencing something that seems to be at odds with what you know to be true. That can be a hard one. What holds me in those moments is not trying to understand everything about what's going on around me, but actually trying to lean into who he is. We've been singing about him today. He doesn't change. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He is Alpha and Omega. He is first and last. He is beginning and end. He is the one true and living God. When we trust in him, that doesn't change. The stuff around me may be confusing. The stuff around me that I'm both experiencing and stuff that I know may be pulling and pushing. So what do? We come back to the reality, to the clarity of what we know about him. And in my darkest moments as a follower of Jesus, and we've had a few, in our darkest moments, what has preserved us, what has transformed us, what has revolutionized us is holding on to what we know about him. That makes sense of everything, even if I can't make sense of the confusion what's going around me. When I can't reconcile my head and my heart, holding on to him will help me manage that tension and help bring clarity to the stuff that I can't work out logically. And there are moments when faith is about believing, even when logic doesn't work. Come on. Revelation clarified their confusion. Secondly, revelation renewed their energy. Love this. Verse 33, they got up and returned at once. Come on. Now you read that quickly. It's marvelous. But they got up and returned at once on a 7-mile journey on foot. Back to Jerusalem. Come on. I don't know how fast you walk, but the average human walks 3 miles per hour. That's what we're told. Okay, 3 miles per hour. If that's the case, then this is a sort of a 2 to 3 hour walk. I don't know how fast they walk. I don't know how fast they did it in. They may have broke the world record for Emmaus to Jerusalem walk that evening. I don't really know, but this is what I do know. On the way home, they were trundling. On the way back, they were walking. On the way home, their heads were down. On the way back, their heads are up. On the way home, their hearts are broken. On the way back, their hearts are energized. On the way home, all seems lost. On the way back, everything makes sense. Something has changed. Why? Because they experienced Jesus. They experienced the revelation of who Jesus is.
is. And it's Jesus. Can I say this without this sounding simplistic or glib? But it's Jesus who puts energy in our soul. Those who wait on him, those who know him, those who connect to him will renew their strength. They will mount up with wings as eagles. They will walk and not be weary. They will run and not be faint. And that's not coming out of my personality. It's not coming out of even the partnerships that I have. It's coming out of a revelation of Jesus Christ. And the revelation of Jesus Christ gives me energy to keep going. When just before that, I wanted to quit for good. It's Jesus. It's the energy in loving Jesus that actually helps us to move forward. And can I say this, lovely brothers and sisters, sometimes we're lacking energy. It's nothing to do with your personality, and it's nothing to do with your body, and it's nothing to do with your age. Many, many times we lack energy because that little passion for the Lord. Come on now. We've got a bit familiar with him. We've got a bit familiar with his ways. We've got a bit familiar with his word. We've got a bit familiar with the magnificence of the Lord. And well, you know. Come on now. You still love me? And it's the truth. Many times I have lost energy for him because I have taken my eyes off him. I've lost energy for him because I've taken my eyes off him. Listen, if your eyes are on this church, you're going to be in trouble. Because this church is going to let you down. If your eyes are on the pastor, Russ, who's enjoying a lovely weekend in Edinburgh, you're going to be let down. Your eyes are on Dina, or God help you, your eyes are on me, you're going to be let down. Now, that's not an excuse for our behavior. That's not an excuse for people not behaving right. But it's reminding us that actually what creates the energy in our souls is not looking at people. When we look at people, it will be up and down like yo-yos. The grand old Duke of York. When he was up, he was up. When he was down, he was down. And when he was neither halfway up, he was neither up nor down. We will be like that. And I've met people over the years, and they're disappointed and they're confused because they're fixing their eyes on broken people. But actually, when our eyes are on Jesus, it's not that we allow broken people to behave badly, but we sort of realize even when people don't behave the way we want them to behave or do what we want them to do, the reason we're on this road is not because of them. It's because of him. That's why I'm walking this road. I'm not walking this road because you're perfect. I'm walking this road because he's the Savior. He's the Redeemer. He's the one who's risen from the dead. That's why I'm walking this road. And can I say this carefully and beautifully and humbly? Had I only had my eyes on people, I would not be here as a follower of Jesus. That's the truth. I'm not dissing the church. It's just a reality. It's having our eyes on him. Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe. Having our eyes fixed on him changes everything. Here's the last idea, and then I am done, all right? You'll be glad to hear. All right, revelation transformed, thirdly, their confession. Look at this, verse 35. It says this, then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread. Funny this, it's ironic, because the same sort of testimony they had regarded as nonsense and amazing, freakish, when the women said it. Now they sound like the women. Right? And they sound like the women because they've seen the Lord. Their confession changes. A few minutes before, we had hoped he was the one. Now, he's alive. He's alive. He is the one. He is the Messiah. He is the one true and living God. And in fact, when he broke the bread and he prayed the blessing, blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who brings forth bread from the earth, we saw something that we had never seen before. We'd seen him in a way we'd never seen before. Our eyes were open to see Jesus in a way we had never understood before. He is alive. He's alive.
And once you see him, you cannot unsee him. And seeing him changes everything. It changes everything. When we see him, our confession changes. Not just our words every day, but our worship, our prayers, our focus. It has the power to change all of that. Why? Because we see him, and seeing him changes everything. And that's at the heart of this journey. That's why the resurrection is so important. Not just at a huge, big macro level is the resurrection important, because the resurrection testifies that Jesus is the Son of God. The resurrection completes and brings to absolute, magnificent conclusion the redemptive purpose of God through Jesus Christ. And we rejoice in that resurrection. But the resurrection, the risen Jesus, is crucial to every individual follower, because once you see him alive, you cannot unsee him. And if you're seeing him because your mommy saw him, it's not enough. If you're seeing him because your husband sees him or your wife sees him, if you see him because your best friend is seeing him, if you're seeing him because your small group leader sees him, or if you're seeing him because Pastor Russ sees him, it's not enough. That will never transform our energy. It will never transform our confession. That will never transform our journey. What transforms our journey is seeing Jesus for ourselves. Every single day, as a follower of Jesus, I did it this morning. I open up his word in his presence and I say, Lord, open my eyes that I may see wonderful things in your law. Here's the reason I pray that prayer, because my human intellect alone is not enough. Knowing facts about Jesus is not enough. Knowing he lived is not enough. Knowing he died is not enough. Even believing he rose from the dead is not enough. It is seeing that Jesus for yourself. That's what changes everything. And when we see him, he has the power to clarify our confusion. Even if the circles never square, he clarifies our confusion. When we see him, energy for the journey is in our souls, even if the journey is hard. And when we see him, confession changes. Because having seen him, we cannot unsee him. Paul prayed this magnificent prayer for the church at Ephesus, a church just like ours. He said, I pray that the spirit of wisdom and revelation will come to you so that you will know him better. I pray that the eyes of your heart will be enlightened so that you will know the hope to which you have been called. Brothers and sisters, I don't know where you are on the journey, but this is what I do know. Whoever you are, wherever you are, we need to see him. And the cry of our heart, whether you've been a Christian like me a million years, is, Lord, never let me get familiar with what I see. Don't let me get used to it. Don't let me take it for granted. Don't let me get familiar. But let my heart always be open to the magnificence of who you are. Because when that's at the center, everything changes. If you're here and you're not a follower of Jesus, maybe you've come to have a look and you're wondering, what on earth is he ranting on about? And I would say to you, it's very, very simple. Knowing about him is not enough. Seeing him changes everything. And if you are serious about finding life and finding hope, then I encourage you to open up your heart and pray this prayer. Lord, open my eyes that I may see you. Open my heart that I may know you. If you can, will you stand with me? I don't know if the band wants to get ready. I'm going to hand back to Dina in just a moment, but I want to pray. I hope that's made sense to you. Hope deferred makes the heart sick. But a longing fulfilled is the tree of life. We had hoped he was the one. We have seen him. He is alive. And as I'm about to pray, here's what I'd just love you to do. If my words have helped you or stirred you or even challenged you, and you want to place yourself in the position where just like these two disciples, in an ordinary moment of breaking bread, they saw the Lord. I want to pray in a moment that in the ordinariness of our everyday, in the ordinariness of walking the dog, of doing the ironing, of going to work, of driving your car, of sitting at dinner with your family, that our eyes will be open and we will see him. He responds to hungry hearts. Stay with us. Don't leave. Please stay. And if our hearts are hungry towards him, I believe that even in the ordinary, the routine, the normal, the unspectacular, our eyes can be opened to see Jesus, even in the bread, in the cup, at the table, in the midst of our world, a resurrected and risen Savior. So as I'm praying, if you want to, in your own world and heart, respond to that, then I would just ask you, either just put your hands out in front of you, or if you want to even be more animated, lift your hands to the Lord. And in doing that, here's what you're saying: Lord, I am hungry to see you. I want my eyes to be open, that I would see your glory, your magnificence, your greatness, and your goodness. Lord Jesus, we want to thank you that you walked with these two disciples. You walked with them, Lord, 7 miles in the wrong direction because you loved them. Because you wanted their hearts to burn. You wanted their minds to be open. You wanted their eyes to see. And Lord Jesus, I know the passion you had for those two on that road is the same passion you have for every person in this room. You have a passion to reveal yourself, a passion to show yourself, a passion to allow yourself to be seen in the breaking of bread, to allow yourself to be seen in the ordinary, the routine, to allow yourself to be seen even in the midst of disappointment, confusion. And Lord, I pray that just as you passionately walk with the two, you will draw near to every man and woman in this room. That every hungry heart, that every heart that secretly, silently, desperately cries out, that Lord, you will respond. And as we cry out to you, you will open our eyes. May the spirit of wisdom and revelation be upon every one of you that you may know him more. May the eyes of your heart be enlightened that you may know the hope to which you have been called. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks for listening to this message from New Life in North Lincolnshire. To find out more, do visit us online at newlifechurch.uk, or why not pay us a visit? We'd love to see you.